This is No Lazy Money with Nick and Jim from Peak Wealth Management. Real people, real money, real talk. And your host, Ryan Ermani.
760 WJR, it is No Lazy Money. Nick Hopwood, the president and founder of Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. We've got Jim Pilot as well, the vice president. You can find them directly online at peakwm.com. This is a show here where we do not sugarcoat it. We don't let your money just sit around and be lazy. That's why the show is called No Lazy Money. We don't want your money to do nothing. We want it to work for you. We've got real people, real money, real talk. Zero laziness. Nick and Jim take a holistic, comprehensive approach. Over the next hour, we're going to discuss real-world stories and results, as well as personal strategies. So we invite you to stick around with us here on 760 WJR. It is No Lazy Money with Nick and Jim. Money here on 760 WJR. Nick Hopwood, the president and founder of Peak Wealth Management. Jim Pilot, the vice president. Nick and Jim, gentlemen, here we are once again. I feel like summer is flying by.
Good evening, Ryan. It is the dog days of summer.
Dog days. We need the cat days back or something. If the dog days are the end, we got to go back to the beginning. Jim, how you doing, brother?
Doing real well, Ryan. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. Now the smoke is clear, and we're enjoying the outdoors a little bit more.
We are. We're out of the cottage. We're enjoying the lake, enjoying the boat, all good times. But there is a cost when it comes to having that cottage and having that second home and that boat. That's what we want to talk about here. What is the true cost of each and every boat ride?
And that's why I say one of the best things you can do in your life is have a friend with a boat or somebody else. Right.
Break out another thousand.
Because that boat ride does cost. That costs a pretty penny.
It does. And, you know, I try not to think about this because, you know, I have a boat and I enjoy living at the cottage in the summer. But here's the deal. If you have a cottage or a second place, I've always called it the anti-dividend, because if you have that money in hand, it can be earning for you. It can be paying a dividend. If you own property instead, not only are you not receiving that dividend, but you're now paying property taxes, you're paying insurance, maintenance, and so on. So it's really an anti-dividend when you take a step back.
A lot is going out. Not a lot is coming in from that specific money. From a financial term, but there are obviously benefits elsewhere.
I like to try and measure the joy and utility.
Yes.
Right? To me, it's worth, you know, $1 million, you know, so to speak. But Jim, you know, we have to do the planning in order to make sure that you can afford to have this property.
Yeah, I don't think anybody should take away from this that you can't have nice things, right? You can't have a boat, you can't have a cottage. That's not at all what I think the takeaway is. I think the takeaway is you got to have a plan in place. And you have to know what you need to do to have that retirement plan work. And as long as you're able to continue doing those things, then you can have the nice stuff. You can have the cottage. You can have the boat life. But it's really important to make sure that you're on track with the retirement plan first.
And that goes back to something I say right in the top of the show, this holistic approach that you guys take and have taken since we've done this show for almost a year now. I mean, you know, part of financial awareness is being able to plan it out, plan your nights out, plan your monthly expenses, plan your yearly expenses, and plan your future. And all of that is included here in what you're talking about.
Yeah, in 2019, we bought a place on the lake, okay? And when I did my own personal financial planning on this topic, I said, am I going to be able to afford this new payment and still be able to max out this, max out that, right? 401k, Roth IRA, HSA, after-tax brokerage account. If I can afford this new payment and still be able to make all of these savings and investments each month, is my plan still on track? Answer is yes. And so we pulled the trigger.
That question alone is what everybody should be asking themselves whenever if they want to buy a new car, if they want to buy a new house, whatever you want to buy, that inherent piece of looking at your future should let you know whether you can dictate the present purchase.
Yeah, and you know, if the plan doesn't work with this new property, and maybe you say, hey, I have to work an extra year or two, or, you know, sacrifice this or that in order to have this new toy or this new place. That's a personal choice, right? If you can trade one for the other, go for it. But we shouldn't expect to be able to have it all the time.
And go back to that planning piece. I mean, even if, you know, you want to have enough money to pay for the gas in the boat. I mean, gas on a lake. I don't know if anybody, like, if you think.
Yeah, Jim, what else do we have to pay for? Jim knows.
Yeah, that's where I was going to bring up as well, because I think people undoubtedly consistently underestimate what the expenses look like. You can add up what the cottage is going to cost, what the boat's going to cost, but you just, people never seem to have their finger on the pulse of the other stuff, right? The gas in the boat. Well, the tubes, the kids want to go tubing. Well, and the rope broke, guess what? And, you know, you need new fenders for the dock, and you need, like, all these things just rack up significantly. You know, I was just looking at boat covers the other day. It's nothing to see boat covers, you know, $800, $900, and it's just an expense that most people underestimate.
Yeah, and it's, you know, whatever the might be a new set of golf clubs. If you're going, you go play golf every week, you know, like those greens fees are going up. I mean, I know we're talking about boats and cottages and bigger purchases than that, but even the little stuff, it takes planning.
And Jim likes to talk about lifestyle creep. So we have to include, hey, we always need a bigger boat.
Tell me more about lifestyle creep.
We need a better boat. These Benningtons are like 150K.
Yeah.
All right. For a Tritoon. It's out of control.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, lifestyle creep is a topic we came across years ago and just really loved it and just think it makes sense. It's basically you make more, you spend a little bit more, and you get comfortable doing that. And once you've got accustomed to spending at a certain level, how well do you think it works going the other way?
It does not work.
Yeah, there's all kinds of rules of thumb out there, like, oh, when you retire, you only need 80% of your pre-retirement income. Well, says who, right? Who out here listening wants to retire to a lesser lifestyle than they have today?
Yeah, if anything, you want to ramp it up a little bit more. Don't you want to do more? Don't you want to travel more? You want to spend more time at the cottage, spend more time on the lake?
Yeah, and I would say that's what we see more times than not. You're retired and people say, yeah, I want to travel a little bit now. We have time, or I can play more golf, right? So we've had clients who've fallen into that trap of, you know, living expenses a lot higher than we originally talked about.
The last point I'll say on this here is don't fall into the trap of retiring and then deciding that you want to buy the second property, because then you can really blow up the plan.
So what would you say to people who are considering this right now? Maybe they're considering buying a boat, considering buying a cottage. What should they be thinking about over the next 12 months, let's say?
They should be thinking about realistic costs and then add 50%. Maybe not. But add a buffer, because everything's more than
maybe
you expect.
Maybe 25%.
Yeah, everything's more than you expect, and then build that into the retirement analysis.
You're listening to No Lazy Money with Nick and Jim from Peak Wealth Management. Real people, real money, real talk. Once again, here's your host, Ryan Ermani.
You are listening to No Lazy Money here on 760 WJR. Nick Hopwood and Jim Pilot, the president, the vice president of Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. You can get in touch with Nick, his email address, nick@peakwm.com, or jim@peakwm.com. I love the easy email address, folks. And we invite you all to check out peakwm.com on 760 WJR. Okay, gentlemen, I want to move along here. Talking about cottage and lake life, let's talk about retirement and when we can enjoy all of these things.
Well, Ryan, one of the things with retirement that we see is that a lot of people are baking into their plan working in retirement or a semi-retirement period.
Many people feel like they have to, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But don't think of, you know, the Walmart greeter. Like, that's like so 90s, right? Think about, you have a skill. Maybe you're an engineer. Maybe you're in sales. Maybe you're in consulting. High level, low hours, high hourly rate, low stress, pick and choose your gigs. And people really like that idea. They like phasing out, right, rather than a hard stop.
Kind of like an a la carte economy, an a la carte job.
Wall Street Journal says, don't count on working in retirement, because while 75% of people, that's a lot, 75% of people plan on working, at least some, only 31% actually do.
We talked about that lifestyle creep in the first segment. Is retirement creep Can you get used to that as well? Maybe you don't want to work, and maybe you think you have this vision of wanting to work and you want to stay active, and then ultimately you don't, Jim, and you continue maybe just going for those walks or going to lunch or taking that trip or doing whatever.
Yeah, I think a lot of people like the thought of that. A lot of people like the idea of giving up the full-time grind, and that's where this concept of semi-retirement comes from. And a lot of times, you know, we'll build that into somebody's financial plan and say, well, you don't, maybe you don't go hard until 65, but you go hard until 60. And then we got a few years of consulting and some other work that we'll do. But to Nick's point, I think that's what we see a lot is, in theory, it sounds like a great idea. And in theory, people think they have a skill set that would work for doing some part-time work. But in reality, a lot of times that doesn't pan out. So for you to build a financial plan based on that assumption that you're going to be able to still bring in income even after you let the full-time job go, can be dangerous.
Is that what you guys are seeing? What are you guys seeing in your from your client base? I mean, of all the people that are retired that maybe have a vision of wanting to stay active or having, you know, a little bit of extra income on the side, maybe, even if it's not for money, but they want to do something to keep their brain going a little bit. Do they trail that off, kind of like the study says?
We spend a lot of time talking with people about what are you going to do when you're with your extra 40 hours a week, so to speak. And so we try to prime them a lot for this. And a lot of people will say, oh, you know, I got the honey-do list. I know right away that's like 2 weeks worth of stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, what are you going to do in the third week? But it's the people that have the false hopes on this retirement, the semi-retirement income, it's absolutely not guaranteed. Okay. And also, people like Jim said, you know, sometimes they want to do the semi-retirement from 60 to 65. Other people, they realize they have to work till 65 full time. But then sometimes they get downsized out of their control. Sometimes there's a health-related incident out of their control. And so I tend to think of a working till 65 as like just an average financial plan. We need to be well above average to account for some of these things that we can't control.
It feels like everything's getting more expensive. It feels like everything is so uncertain, too. I mean, people that, you know, I hate to even put it out there in the atmosphere, but like I always say, one of my biggest fears in life is to get 57, 58 and to have an employer say, no, thanks, done. You know, then you look at your financial picture and you say, well, I really, do I want to start a new career? Do I have that skill? Am I prepared to continue working? Am I prepared to sit back financially from where I am right now? I mean, that's a really big question as to when people can stop working.
Do I love the idea of reduced hours? Yeah I do. Right. I can relate to that. But look, if I'm 47, if I'm 60 and I have to start a new career with new skills, boy, how many people want that?
I can't imagine too many people listening to us right now would feel good about that.
Right.
Maybe. You know what I mean?
Feel a little helpless.
Yeah, totally. What do you say to that, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, it all points back to the decisions you make as early as you can, right? We were talking a little bit earlier about, can you buy the cottage? Can you buy the boat? All that kind of stuff. There's another concept called your freedom number, right? What do you have to do? What do you have to save? What do you have to invest today to allow you that freedom in the future? And I think that most people, I would say, who are even in that boat, you know, late 50s, early 60s, still needing to work, even people who are doing well. I mean, one of the biggest things that people will say to us is, I wish I started saving sooner and I wish I saved more. Those are two of the things that most people look back and say that's what they wish they did. So to me, all of it's just a reminder to sacrifice now, right?
I want to come back to that in a second. Because I signed my kids up for Trump accounts this week, and I want to talk to you about that because of that very question. How many people out there say, I wish I would have started saving sooner. I wish I would have taken my retirement, my future, as seriously at 25 that I did at 35. I mean, those 10 years of savings, those 10 years of compounding interest, I mean, just lost because, you know, I wanted every dollar that I was making early on in retirement was so far ahead. 40 years from now, I'm going to retire. What do I need? Another question for another time. what I wanted to ask you guys was, it's never too late to start. So for people who are 45 to 55 in that age range right now, when you're looking at retirement or semi-retirement, what should they be considering right now, driving along, listening to us, you know, at night, and they're listening to us and, yeah, I wish I would have saved a lot more too. I wish I would have prepared a little bit better in the future. What would you say to that 45, 50, 55-year-old person?
I think they have to play a little catch up, right? So maybe instead of Ryan at 25, you know, at age 25, he was putting 10% into the 401. Now you might have to do 20%, right, playing catch up. You might also have to work longer, but, you know, like we've talked about this whole segment, you can't always count on that. So you really have to play catch up with your contributions. I don't want to say like you have to take a second job or anything, but I think Dave Ramsey would say that.
Yeah.
But that's a little much maybe.
What about you, Jim?
Yeah. I mean, the saying is, you know, the best time to start was 20 years ago. The second best time is today. So I would just encourage people to don't delay anymore, right? Get a plan in place, start doing something. Something's better than nothing. And once you've started doing some savings, it's always easier to bump it up a little, turn the dial just a little bit more. And next thing you know, maybe you're hitting the max on the Roth IRA, or we've gotten the 401k, you know, up to the limit. And that's the way to do it, is just jump in and get going.
Ryan, you brought up Trump accounts.
Yeah.
Like, think about the people who are fortunate right now, parents, grandparents. It might seem like not very much, $5,000 per year, but, you know, over 18 years, if you have, you know, if you have babies, it's 90 grand, which can actually be worth $7 million by the time that baby is retired. And so it changes everything. And it doesn't have to be used for retirement. And probably most people won't. But those are the real numbers.
You're listening to No Lazy Money with Nick Hopwood and Jim Pilot here on 760 WJR. You can find Nick and Jim at Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth, peakwm.com. And we are right back here, 760 WJR, Nick Hopwood, Jim Pilot, the president and vice president of Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. PeakWM.com is the website. You can get in touch with these gentlemen through email as well. Nick@PeakWM.com. Jim, his email address, Jim@PeakWM.com. We've mentioned the Trump accounts. Gentlemen, earlier this week, I signed my kids up for Trump accounts that went live on July 4th.
And how easy was it?
Nick, it was the easiest thing I've ever done in my life. Seriously. I actually pulled my laptop out and I went to Trump accounts or Google Trump accounts. You go to the website, it says download the app. You could only do it on the app. So I downloaded the app. It was so simple. And you've got to do a social security number, and then it takes a day before they actually activate your account. And then after that day, then I put my banking account information in and made the deposit for each kid right there. And it is so simple. And one of the things, whenever you say Trump, it elicits a political response. You know, half the country hates it, half the country loves it. Governor Wes Moore of Maryland, Democrat from Maryland, I'm really glad he did this too. One of the president's staunchest opponents out there in the political sphere. He came out and said, listen, don't hate this man enough to not plan for your kid's future. This is a really good thing. And I'm glad he did that, because if nothing else, and you were mentioning $5,000 is the max you can contribute every year. But if your kid is 5 years old, if your kid's 1 year old, you essentially have an extra 18 years of compounding interest. I mean, if you max that thing out, again, that's a big if you max that thing out until you're 60, you're looking at like $17 million, $13 million. You know what I mean?
My math said seven, so I'll take your word for it.
Well, actually, the Trump account website said $13 million, so it's probably take half of that, and you can believe what's in the middle, right?
So,
but that was based on an average of 15% over a 10-year.
Yeah, 15%.
The average 10-year return.
That was the last 10.
Yeah.
So you're familiar. You go up north to Charlevoix,
yes,
right? You're familiar with Deer Lake over at,
yes,
Boyne Falls. So I'm sitting there on July 5th on my iPhone, sitting looking at the beautiful lake. Sign my kids up right there on the iPhone. took like 10 minutes, five minutes per kid, super simple. And then I linked my bank, like you said. So I agree, very easy. And now we're thinking about retirement being worth millions of dollars, okay? But it doesn't have to be used for retirement, okay? Now, right now we're seeing the lowest confidence level in a decade for people, for working people, as it relates to retirement. So over 61% of workers say, I'm not feeling confident about retirement. Well, if you are confident about your retirement, this is one thing you can do to help your kids, right? Everyone knows about a 529 for college.
Sure.
Well, guess what? Student loans are still a problem. Student loans are forcing people to work longer. Wall Street Journal says people can't retire because they're still paying off these freaking student loans.
And not everybody will go to college, too. And now I know a couple of years ago, I forget what year it was, but a couple of years ago, they said you can start using those 529 accounts for other things. But nonetheless, you know, that is those 529s still obviously contribute to your 529. But that was specifically thought to go to your education.
Yeah.
But not everybody goes to college.
I mean, the new mantra, though, is 500 a month to the 529 and 5,000 per year to the Trump account. If you have the means to do it, to really set your kids up, because right now, the way things are, Jim, with the student loans and with the housing market, living with your parents is now considered smart.
Absolutely. Think about that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you think of these young people coming out into the workforce, I mean, if they're having to allocate, you know, 50, 60% of their paycheck to a rent expense and to a car and to all these things, it just really hampers their ability to do any savings and get a early jump like we've talked a lot about tonight. But hey, you know, if you can live with mom and dad for a little bit, stay in the basement, it's not a bad thing, but you can save that rent expense, pile it up for maybe a down payment on a house, or maybe it allows you to start making contributions into the Roth. What a great opportunity.
You know, I also think one of the benefits of this Trump accounts is it is getting more people to talk about saving for their future. And maybe it's not a Trump account that you want to get involved in, although I would say from my experience is very easy to do. It is like a set it and forget it kind of thing. If you have a kid that's under the age of 18 years old, now we didn't qualify for the $1,000 in, but you can contribute yourself or have whatever. But it is getting people to talk about their future, to talk about the market, to invest, and to see what compounding interest. Nobody talked about this stuff when I was a kid or a younger person. Nobody talked like that.
Yeah, Ryan, in 1998, the Senator Roth sponsored the Roth IRA bill, right? And no one was like, hey, I'm not adding to my Roth IRA because of Senator Roth, right? You know, we have an email that we send out to our clients each week, and we were highlighting the Trump accounts as, you know, a tool for their children and grandchildren. And one lady responds to the email saying, please don't be promoting this thing, anything with his name on it, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, listen, I'm sorry. This is my fiduciary responsibility. I'm not going to not do a Roth because I don't like Senator Roth, right, for example. And so we had that. And then just today, we're in a meeting this morning at the office, and the lady says, well, you know, I want to help my two grandchildren. And she was thinking about how to do it. And I said, well, you can do a 529 gift to the existing account. You could, you know, make a gift to a UGMA brokerage account. You could do a Trump account. And she's like, I'm not doing a Trump account.
That's amazing. It is truly amazing. You should say, well, you can call it a 530 because isn't it like a 530? Yeah.
You can have a 529
right,
and a 530.
And 530. I think that's ultimately what like the actual thing is like a 530. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I feel sorry for people that hate so much that they can't even see the good in that.
Yeah, I would say that's the topic that's come up several times over the years, right? When Biden got in office, people said, I want my money out of the market. He's going to crash it all, right? What'd they do? They missed a great market.
Sure.
Trump got in. Everybody says, not everybody, but half the people say, we got to get out. Trump's going to kill the market.
Right.
Market's been great.
Especially
right?
In April of 25, I think it was.
Right. So we've continually told people over the years, don't let politics influence your investment decisions. It's just not a good habit. It's continually proven wrong. You know, there's all kinds of studies that go way back into history. And is the market better with Democrats or Republicans? Guess what? It's about the same.
Yeah. Like,
it doesn't really change. Your politicians don't make a difference. And then they say, well, guess what? This time's going to be different, right? We've never seen a leader like this. Well, history doesn't show us that. So I think that's been advice that we've talked about for a long time, is not letting politics get in the way of your investment decisions. But it's just looking at it for the opportunity that it is. And a lot of people stayed away from 529s because they used to be restrictive. And they'd say, well, what if they don't go to college? I don't want all that money to be stuck in there. So they didn't open them, right? But then the rule changed and people started saying, I just had a person reach out to me recently and said, well, I want to do a 529 now because that's how I can get money into Roth for my kid. Well, it doesn't work. It's got to be in there for 15 years for you to do that. So guess what? The Trump account's there. You now have an opportunity.
Do you remember in 2005 when Bush was reelected, he went on a kind of a road tour of promoting Social Security accounts, privatizing it?
Nick, in my 20s in 2005, yeah. I don't remember a lot.
Oh,
was,
okay.
All right. It was a tough time. It was I was a maniac back in the day. So I don't know what
privatizing Social Security, right?
Yes.
Now we have 78% of workers worried that they're not going to get their Social Security or Medicare benefits. This is a kind of an idea of grabbing the bull by the horns, you know, grabbing, you know, taking it into your own hands and saying, hey, I'm going to plan outside of, you know, the government social system and go on my own and invest in my future and my kids' future so I don't have to rely on Social Security being such a high percentage. But I will say, if we would have privatized Social Security in 2005 like George Bush wanted to, I think that we would be in a much better situation for Social Security.
You're listening to No Lazy Money with Nick and Jim from Peak Wealth Management. Real people, real money, real talk. Once again, here's your host, Ryan Ermani.
760 WJR, you're listening to No Lazy Money here with Nick Hopwood and Jim Pilot from Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth, peakwm.com. Right back here, 760 WJR, Nick Hopwood, Jim Pilot, the president and the vice president, Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. You can get in touch with Nick, nick@peakwm.com, jim@peakwm.com. Gentlemen, just to clean up something we were talking about a moment ago, you talk about young people. I feel terrible for young people, for what they're going through. Everything is so expensive. Housing is expensive. College is expensive. Their debt is expensive. Every car, an average new car is over $50,000. They're fighting from behind from the jump. And a lot of them feel like the American dream is lost. You talk about living at home. A lot of people are moving in together. What would your best advice be to a young person? Maybe they're in their early 20s, mid-20s, about how to fight through this time period. I think inflation, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw a stat actually this morning. Since 2019, inflation has risen 27% since 2019 alone. It is hard to fight this economy that we're in, the cost of living.
The price of assets have gone up even more, right? So the price of that house, the rent, the student, the cost of college, as you say, cars even more, right? So I do feel that pain, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but it might be a good idea to live in mom's basement to save some money here.
Seriously.
Okay. Wall Street Journal says the smart money now is living at home. And man, like I say, I can't believe I'm saying this, but gosh, when we started in the business 25 years ago, that was like a big taboo. It was awful.
You failed.
Yeah, it was.
You failed.
It was like the parent failed and the kid failed.
Yeah.
And now it's like a Nash equilibrium somehow, you know?
No doubt.
Yeah, I think the thing to keep in mind with that, too, is if that's, you know, the necessary route, living at home, you got to use that opportunity as an opportunity to get ahead, right? It's not an opportunity to say, okay, well, now we can eat out more. Now I can go to Morgan Wallen, right? even though, though that was worth it.
I did go to Morgan Wallen, and I will tell you, I went to Prince a couple of weeks ago. I was the oldest guy there. We went to Morgan Wallen, and I was the youngest guy. Or excuse me, I was the oldest guy there. It was like two ends of the spectrum.
I thought that Morgan Wallen was going to bring you out through the big house tunnel.
You should have been the guy.
Aiden Hutchinson?
I made the call. I said, can I go behind Aiden Hutchinson? They're like, dude, no.
He would eclipse you completely. Though,
right. So. Yeah.
But the point is using it as an opportunity to get ahead, right? Yeah. Start that $100 a month, $200 a month into the Roth IRA, getting money in there for as long as you can, because we've talked a lot tonight about time being time is either your best advantage or your worst enemy, right? It's either going to help you or it's going to be a real hindrance. So using it to get ahead, not just using it to live the life that you think you should be living.
I have a couple thoughts here.
Okay? Sure.
Number one, your income, when you're in your early 20s, and really I'm not talking to the kid, I'm talking to the parents in this case.
Sure. Okay?
You have to preach to them. Your job, your earnings, that is your biggest asset. It's not your bank account or your car or even if you do have a house. Your future value, your future income stream is your largest asset. Secondly, you have to choose your spouse very wisely. Okay.
That is the biggest decision you will make in your life.
Absolutely.
Period. End of story.
I think it was Henry Ford who said something like, you know, I owe everything to my wife, you know, being that backbone behind him. And then also, if I'm the parents here, as nice as it would be to collect some rent, you know, from little Jimmy, no, let them put it into a bank account and save all that money. Like Jim said, take advantage of the situation.
Without question. Let me go before we end the show. I want to go to the other end of the spectrum to retirement age. It is an uncertain time for a lot of these retirees. I mean, maybe people are just living off their Social Security checks, which is devastating at this stage of the game right now. Retirement confidence, the lowest in a decade. Talk to me more about that.
Yeah, so many of these people, 61% said that they do not feel comfortable or confident with their retirement plan. So they're actually worried about running out. Forget about optimizing anything. They're worried about running out. And so the two things that they indicated were healthcare, which makes sense because healthcare continues to grow at a double-digit rate of inflation. And secondly, debt, whether it be continued student debt in retirement for themselves or for their kids, like a lot of people took out student loans for their kids, right? Or the mortgage, okay? And I see this a lot of times. People are retiring with a brand new 30-year mortgage. Well, if you have high cost of healthcare between 60 and 65, like pre-Medicare, if you still have a mortgage payment, if you still have a student loan, you kind of have to keep working unless, you know, you have millions of dollars.
What would your message be, Jim?
Yeah, I think the best way to improve that retirement confidence is, I mean, obviously having as much saved as possible, but the other side of it is having the least amount of obligations as you can, right? Getting the mortgage paid off, you know, getting your cost of living at a reasonable rate, you know, not trying to go from living, the dream life to now I'll cut back in retirement, you know, but having a good handle on what your expenses are and a good handle on what they'll look like moving forward.
Talking about requirements, how much of a piece is it, you know, where parents will want to give every advantage to their kid? They'll pay for this, they'll pay for that. But you really have to take care of yourself first. I mean, your kid has time. You don't.
Yeah, I always say at some point you have to put number one number one first. That's yourself. And so your kid might have 40 years of work left and you have just a couple of years of work left and maybe you're still playing catch up. So you have to really keep that in mind. And it just breaks my heart when I see people with big student loans for their kids. Like you're 60 years old and you owe 200 grand to the feds for your son's and your daughter's college.
Yeah.
Like, how did this happen?
Exactly.
Yeah. To your point though, I mean, while college expense student loans is a huge problem, there's lots of ways to pay for college. There's only one way to pay for retirement.
Yeah.
And that's through your own savings.
No doubt. Any big plans for the rest of the summer, gang?
I'm working on my travel budget, Ryan. What do you think is a fair travel budget? 10% of pay, 5% of pay, 1% of pay?
Oh, man. I like to travel.
Maybe 10%.
I like to.
Plus Delta Sky
Miles. Yeah. That sounds about right.
How much do you think it is worth the value of being a Delta Diamond?
Oh, gosh. I mean, pretty immeasurable
I think
right
like
now.
$10,000.
Yeah. I mean, pretty immeasurable right now.
My friends just flew to Amsterdam and got upgraded to Delta One as a result of being Diamond with one of the certificates. And they paid $1,000. And that's like a $7,000 flight.
That's incredible.
So there's a $12,000 benefit right there.
Maybe that's something we should talk about is all of the different perks that people don't use or don't know about. But there are ways that you can spend and build perks that will pay for itself in spades.
They have like points enthusiast websites that you can subscribe to. Mm-hmm. You can hire a consultant for thousands of dollars to utilize your points. Like when I was watching the other day, they're talking about a Dubai trip, like red carpet, first class, $50,000.
Wow.
Which is like, wow. And he said, well, I did it with 1,000,000 Chase points.
Really? Like, yeah. That's what, you know, I have a Chase card, and basically I, you know, every year we go to Florida and the trip is paid for.
Yeah.
And just points.
So they're talking about how you can get more than 1 point per dollar when you spend, and how you get more than 1 point per dollar bringing it out.
Yeah.
And it can be quite rewarding.
Now we spend a lot every month to get those points.
Hey, as long as
it gets paid off every month. It gets paid off every month. Well, gentlemen, this is fantastic. Jim, any last words for the people out there listening? What do you want them to take away from tonight?
I mean, just hopefully they hear some of our conversation. They learn a little bit how we think, and if they ever think they'd benefit from a second opinion, that's something that we love to do for people.
What about you, Nick? What is the big takeaway for our audience tonight?
I like to piggyback on what Jim said with a second opinion. A lot of times people have their advisor and they're just going down the path, or maybe they're DIY and they don't know what they're missing. But yeah, just because, you know, you see you're marching towards the goal, it doesn't mean you're optimized. It doesn't mean that you're on the quickest path.
We all need another look.
Yes.
Another set of eyes never hurt anybody. Nick Hopwood, Jim Pilot, we really appreciate you, gentlemen. I look forward to our talks every month, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
Thanks, Ryan.
If you want to get in touch with Nick and Jim, you can get in touch with Nick Hopwood. His email address is nick@peakwm.com. If you want to get in touch with Jim, his email address is jim@peakwm.com. This is No Lazy Money here on 760 WJR. If you missed any part of the show, we will put this on the YouTube channel. What is your YouTube address?
YouTube.com/peakwealthmgmt.
MGMT, Peak Wealth MGMT. It'll be up on YouTube. You can see these two fine, handsome mugs right there on your computer, on your tablet, wherever you'd like. But we certainly appreciate having you along with us here. This is No Lazy Money. I'm Ryan Armani. I look forward to speaking with you again soon. This is 760 WJR.